Hello and welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. I would like to thank the following supporters for their continuous support. Matilda Smith Thompson, Shannon Quinton, Lydia Kikuchi, Stacey Corrigan, Elvira Dubas, Candy Gleason, Angie Zadava, Megan Eichner, Cheyenne Hampton, Kelly Milkey, Alicia Olin, Rachel Boren, Stephanie Carnes, Whitney Griggs, Chris Cooling from the Forgotten.tv podcast, Katie Bollinger, Julia Jin, Julia Monin, David Webb, Jill Stellman, Rebecca Frederick, Peyton England, Chris Hassler from the VHS Rewind podcast, Brian S., Stacy Keller, Bobby Young, Whitney, Gerald Lang from the OSI Files podcast, Matt Mercier, Teresa Trapp, Jeannie Schneider, Spunky Cheek, Max Duration, Dana Wilkins, Laura Furman, Valerie Williams, Annie Quinn, Chantel Dubois-Nishiyama, Ginny Comer, Daddy Cashin, Aaron Wortman, Liz Serha, Don Roberts, Rebecca Harris, Michelle Plug, Suzanne Holland, Melissa Gilbert, Dean Butler, Sherry Benner, Angela Bowen from the Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast, Leah Mitchell from the Retro TV podcast, Susan King, Jeff Griffin, and Megan Parker. Thank you all for your support. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/WalnutGrovecast. Without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Walnut Grove is a place to be. If you're living in 1863, Walnut Grove was a place to be. If you're living in 1863. Welcome. My name is Mark, and I'm on tonight with Gerald Lang. How are you doing, Gerald?
Hey there, Mark. It's good to be back to do another episode called The Gift.
Yeah, man. This is going to be a good one. This is a sleeper episode, I think. This is one that people forget about.
Yeah, I think so. And this actually premiered a week before Christmas, December 17th, 1975, because I don't think they had a Christmas episode. It's called The Gift, and it kind of would remind us when we dig into the discussion that it's perfect for we just finished, the Christmas season now, and it's a gift within a gift, and what a gift really means, and what's the heart behind a gift.
But you're right. Their next episode wouldn't be until January 7th, the following year, which is 1976, and that was his father's son. So, it's kind of interesting, big jump there.
No, you're right. The fact is they didn't have a Christmas episode, which I think was somewhat of a commonplace for some shows, at least this season. We just finished on the other podcast that I do co-host. We just did the $6 Million Man's episode, mm-hmm. and that was a Christmas episode called A Bionic Christmas Carol.
Why don't you talk a little bit about your podcast and where people could find it?
Oh, okay. I was going to do that at the end, but
twice.
Yeah, I'm a co-host of the OSI Files with the main host, John S. Drew, and then we have Elizabeth. On Wednesdays, when we do the Bionic $6 Million Man on Sundays, we do a live Facebook show. We're live at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time and review in order. We're on season 4 now, the $6 Million Man. Then on Wednesdays, John does with another co-host, Elizabeth Goddard. They do the Bionic Woman on Wednesdays, episode by episode. And we're going along with the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman just at the same days on Sundays and Wednesdays, just like the episodes were back then, and we were watching them. And
that's awesome.
They're on season 2 of the Bionic Woman, and we just did actually a couple weeks ago the Christmas Carol. It's called A Bionic Christmas Carol, and it's kind of on the Scrooge, the story of Scrooge, and how Steve is kind of dressed up as Santa. And you have the guy, what's his name, from My Favorite Martian. His name slips my mind right now.
I never remember names.
Yeah, it slipped
Michael Landon.
But the actor from that, he plays like a Scrooge kind of character. And yes, that's the show we do.
So you're in season 4 right now of that. What year is that? What
chronologically? 1976, getting near the end of it. Yeah, we've been doing it we do the year. We do all the episodes back then, just like Little House on the Prairie, a lot of shows. You had 20, 20 to 25 episodes back then.
I'm just throwing an idea out there. I'm just getting this idea. So we're kind of in the same universe right now, right? In regular television history. So, you know, with Little House on the Prairie, The $6 Million Man, if we could find another show that is reviewing it in a similar way, maybe we should all kind of get together for a roundtable and talk about the evening's or the week's television shows.
Oh, no.
That would just be kind of funny.
An interesting thing because, you get a lot of these people that run these podcasts that are based in the 70s, a lot of shows like this one, like the other one I'm on, and a lot of them out there, we're all the same age. We all have, in the same range of ages. And
we're all in the mid to late 40s at this point.
Yeah.
Some are a little bit older, and that's fine, too. I also... I'm always interested in Little House on the Prairie is a little different. For whatever reason, Little House on the Prairie can pull in 18-year-olds. I'm not really sure how that works, but maybe because it's based in the 19th century, could that be it?
It could be just the core at the core of what Little House is about. It's about family, and nowadays, the family is a little stretched, a little more apart. I think isn't so many things going on in life. In general, compared to when we grew up, where families were a little tighter knit. When the dinner, we all sat down and had dinner together. There wasn't, you were told you're having dinner with us, and you didn't can say, I'm going to go watch TV or I'm going to be on my cell phone or stuff,
Right. We still try to do that, but yeah, it's tougher. It's definitely tougher than it was when I was a kid. So we open up in something that I've only heard about. I don't think I've ever attended a Sunday school session, but we're having an outdoor lesson, which kind of reminds me of what some kids are doing right now with the pandemic, doing some classes outdoors. But that's what it totally reminded me of from the beginning. But it kind of makes sense. It kind of doesn't. I'm kind of curious now with Sunday school, what is going on for the adults? Did you attend Sunday school? Yes. Or were you catechism?
Yes, I did. I went to Sunday school. Obviously, I think it's outside because, at least from looking at the church building, and which is the school, there's no room on the inside other than to have a service. So they maybe during the winter they didn't have Sunday schools at all. But yes, I was Sunday school. You'd have it in a basement. Our church was upstairs, and then downstairs was the area where you had the kitchen, and you had the little stage area for the kids' stage and a play area. Well, yeah, we'd have Sunday school usually during service. Even nowadays in church is more modern.
So what are they doing when they're all together? Isn't that service?
Well, yeah, it depends on the churches. Some of the more modern churches, when they do the preaching, they consider it's for adults, and some of the subject matter is a little hard for kids to understand. So they have a separate area where kids are being taught by younger pastors and a similar message, but in a way that kids can relate to. But yeah, I went to Sunday school, and it was just like this. We'd all different ages, and it wasn't one age. You're all different ages up to a certain, up to 12 years old, roughly, 6 to 12. And you'd be taught together in the Bible and stuff like that. I remember we'd save, too, to buy stuff for the pastor. We'd save for when it's the pastor's birthday or a special holiday for the church.
Yeah, I went to Hebrew school. But, it was the same type of thing. But it would be, during the week after school for a couple hours. But it's interesting. I think it's interesting. Maybe also different churches do it different ways. But nonetheless, no one's ever going to say that Walnut Grove wasn't doing, really modern teaching. They have their whole curriculum ready for the kids. So we're outdoors and we're talking about the upcoming gift. I'm just going to play the thing and it'll set it up.
That's all we have time for today, but we will be reviewing this lesson next Sunday.
What for?
In the hope that you can answer some questions that you couldn't answer today. Laura, will you take up the collection, please?
Sure. How much do we have?
So far, only 2 cents.
Some of these clips are a little bit long, but I'm going to let them play just because they really do set up the entire event and all of the things that are kind of going on. So just bear with me, please.
I mean, all together.
$1.56.
You can all be proud. That's enough money to buy Reverend Alden a very nice birthday present.
No, my mother says we could give our own presents to Reverend Alden,
like we do every year.
Why can't you just be like the rest of the children and join in?
My mother says we're not like the rest of the children.
I suppose she's right.
With disgust, she just turns to them and just... Boy, it's like, remind us that you're from a different, like, class, you know? It's, like, kind of crazy. But, yeah, they go on to talk about this.
Let's go play.
Not yet. Mary, your treasurer, what are you going to buy for Reverend Alden?
I don't know. We haven't voted yet.
I vote for a new tie.
You can't vote because you didn't give. And besides, reverends don't wear ties, silly. They can't with a backwards collar.
Laura's right, Willie.
I vote for a brand new ball and bat.
Are you sure you're thinking of Reverend Alden, David? That sounds more like a present for you.
Well, I can help him use it.
I thought we might get him a new Bible.
Hey, that's a good idea. The cover's falling off the one he has.
This girl has the typical 70s voice, right? Like, she should be in a Brady episode. Like, hey, like the friend who's just, I'm calm and collected. And there's something about her voice that really reminds me of all of that. And I'm even thinking of a particular Brady Bunch episode with one of their friends that showed up once. I have to like find out who this girl is and see, maybe she is that girl. I don't know. But here's the rest of that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor? Motion passed. And I can't think of a finer present. Mary, since you've been our treasurer for all these months...
I do want to just point out that it's very important, I think, to realize that they did have a vote. Everybody in the Sunday school class voted. They all put their money in, and they all collectively made the decision together as to what to get. So I'm going to bring that up a little bit later.
I think you should be the one to buy and then present the Bible.
I'll order it right away.
When is his birthday?
5 weeks from today, same as my ma's.
Please, can we keep it a secret?
Of course. We won't any of us say a word until the big day. Promise.
Yes.
Now everybody.
Yes.
Oh.
So, of course, you know, it's a great gift, right? I mean, what else are you really going to get for a reverend? You get him a tool, you know, a tool in his craft, right? Laura, they're all saying that you should pick out one with pictures and gold and colors. Now, you're a pretty religious person. Do you have more than one Bible?
Yes, I do.
I don't mean to call you out like a religious person. It's just
I'm a
seriously. That's all.
No, I'm a Christian. I'm not afraid to say that. Kind of just believes in treating people the way you want to be treated.
Yeah,
and that. But yeah, I have different Bibles. You know, there's different kinds. There's. I still have the one from when I was a kid, and we were talking about the Sunday school before that. You know, I went Sunday school. I still have that one, which was a big picture one, and it was basically an abridged version where you just take the basic stories of the Bible, and it's all painted by like these classic 50s illustrators, and it's beautiful. And then there's the abridged ones that are basic, just more like story versions. Then there's I have one that's called the archaeological Bible, which gets into, as you're going through the Bible, it has sections that actually explain the towns and the history of the area where the things, you know, in the Bible, where the stories and the different texts, part of text happen, you know, different areas of the world, talks about Jerusalem, gives a historical, archaeological point.
Yeah,
in a
modern Bible, time. Some Bibles really touch upon this in such an interesting way. I'm sure you've seen all of the ones I'm about to bring up, but they'll open it up. You'll open it up and you'll have this really detailed map of Jerusalem and, you know, you sometimes get timelines as to, you know, when Jesus was born and when he was crucified and when he rose. You know, it's really interesting. And I think that it's sometimes very important to have that. I mean, a Bible is a really, there's a reason why people use the word Bible as a description for a or as something that's complete and digestible for other things outside of religion.
No, it's about contextualizing. You know, we heard they call it the Good News Sometimes Bibles, which, you know, the good news of Christ coming, you know, to save the world. But then there's the Old Testament and New Testament. And really, the best way with the Bible, there's different versions of the Bible. There's like the King James Version, yeah, which has got all the, you know, the Roman English language in there that we call the butterfly language, you know, a little fancier. But there's different versions, and it's, you know, it's about contextualizing, taking what's taught, whether you believe or not, the message that's in there, and how to apply it to your life, they call it. And even in times of this, that this story happened, they, you know, they were able to take whatever they could, and, you know, like the Reverend talks at the end, you know, about the gift of love and what, you know, the message of what the Bible is, and all about love at the core. And it's about being able to apply it to your life, whatever messages there are.
And of course, with the Old and New Testament, I refer to it jokingly, of course, the New Testament is like the sequel. Yeah. And it's just, you know, as a Jew, you know, the entire Old Testament does fall right into Judaism. And, you know, it's all also a great thing to grow up with and learn and study. And, you know, like you said, there's a ton of different interpretations and the Aramaic writings and how it was kind of brought to English and, you know, all the translations. It can get really confusing, but it's a fascinating rabbit hole to go down. Yep. And just Bibles everywhere. Now, I have I have a Sears and Roebuck reprint catalog from 1897. So it's not completely accurate because this is supposed to be 1875.
Yes.
So I'm looking here, and they have one particular page where, you know, they have teachers' Bibles and family Bibles and all this stuff. They have Bibles for as little as, let me see, what's the cheapest one here? There's one for $1.10, which still seems a little bit high. Mm-hmm. $1 equals about $25 now. Oh, no, you can get a small Bible here for 18 cents. Which makes a lot of sense, because everybody should have access to a book that, you know, is a part of a religion. And probably very often churches would buy them in quantity to give to people in the event that they don't have their own. But so here's Blabbermouth Laura on the ride home. She really can't keep a secret, can she?
No.
All right.
How was Sunday school?
Just fine.
What'd you learn about?
Learned about the new Bible.
What new Bible?
She means the New Testament.
So it's kind of, I thought that was like a funny little cute little thing. It's like, shut up, Laura. Mouth. The Olsons, you know, the Olsons are the type to, they're the ones who buy you the Tesla for your wedding, you know. They're the type who are like, we need to be the, you know, here's 50 grand for a down payment for your house. They're going to
clarify that. It's actually not the Olsen. It's the mother.
Yeah.
And it's the mother pushing the kids, of course. And it's the husband's doing what, you know, Nell's doing what she tells him pretty much. Even though you'll see when we watch this episode, the look on his face whenever things are being done, or she pretty much is like, he says, no candy, stay out of there. She says, you can have one. To fight back. Then later, he's like, goes to take another. No, you can't have any more candy.
Yeah, and I'm gonna play the clip because it is very funny. The how Nels is begrudgingly kind of going along with it.
Should there be a nine, Nels?
Yes, dear.
You said we could get anything we wanted, didn't you, Mark?
And I said what?
Get away from the candy, Willie. You'll spoil it.
Reverend Alden's birthday present. You said we could get anything we wanted.
Oh, I said within reason.
Can I have one piece, Mark?
Just one, yes.
Here's what we want. Something no one else will think to get him. A Bible.
Oh. Huh?
Genuine hand-tooled Moroccan leather with Holy Bible stamped in gold on the front and back covers.
Oh. It's kind of messed up if we're really going to talk about it. Because Nellie knows very well that they're going to buy a Bible. And what is she going to do? One-up them with the same gift, but nicer. You know, physically nicer. Very messed up. And also, you know, I'm sorry, Willie asking permission for candy. Let's not ignore that. I don't know if I've ever asked him. I don't know if I've ever heard him ask for permission.
Well, I think he did that purposely just because, you know, the father would say no and the mother would say, well, yes, because my little boy asked for permission so he can have whatever he likes. It's funny. Whenever you see the scenes with the Olsons, you can see that with the kids, when they're with the kids the way they are, they're like, well, my mom says this. We're different than all the other kids. And you're like, you know, as a kid, you just wanted to punch them out. Yeah. And then you see the parents in a dynamic where the mother's very, you know, very aggressive, very boastful, very, you know, give the best for everybody. And the husband is more timid, even though he looks like he wants to snap any moment. at her. And he's just reserved. And the actor in his portrayal of Nels is just Richard Boll, I believe. Is that the name?
Yeah, Richard Boll, yeah.
Yeah, he is both of them. She's over the top, and he's very reserved, but he wants to blow over the top, but he's so reserved, the two actors.
Yeah, that's why it's so refreshing when he does just freak out at them. And it's just like, all right, finally. Thank God you're doing that, because otherwise you're going to kill the family.
Yeah, I almost wonder. I don't know his history of them. Did the money come from her family and he married into her money with her? I get that take he's like reserved. Well, I married into money with her.
I don't think it's consistent, because, I mean, we learn that Nels has an Ivy League education. Yeah. She has money from her family. So I think it's really just a combination of two families kind of getting together, and she's very good with business. But what's odd is they chose Wannacrove to have a store. Maybe it's a very good idea also, you know, to open a store where, of course, there's a need. But it just seems like they would have done better, of course, in a bigger city. Maybe not, because they did try that and failed.
Yeah, because she even corrects him on her numbers, and that tells you the business mind of hers. She's like, shouldn't that be a 9? And he's like, yes, dear. Yeah. And he just like grudgingly, look, you could see his hand moving down the actor like he's changing, even though he already knew it was wrong or something. And he was trying to fix the numbers or something. I don't know if she caught him or trying to be cheap. And he's like, come on, we don't have to be this cheap with the numbers. But
no, he's trying to like lower the Ingalls debt by 9 cents, and she caught it.
Yeah. that sounds like her for sure.
All right.
Very nice.
Magnificent illustrations and genuine steel engravings. Mm-hmm. It was
$12. $12?
Marked down to $3.
Now,
$12. Now, granted, you know, you have the publisher price, but $12, that's, you know, the equivalent of about $300.
Yep.
For a book.
That's expensive, even with the gold, because I can tell you, $12 roughly gets you a decent Bible with, you know, leather, light, you know, like either leather or fake leather bound, mm-hmm. you know, smaller 6x8 Bible. It's not engraved, obviously, or stuff. I'm just thinking the fact they wanted to make it sound, I think purposely they bumped it up in the script to make it sound more impressive, because Bibles, I've never heard of a Bible that costs $300. Oh, well, even with the engraved names and stuff, you get around $40 or $50 or something.
Gerald, let me tell you, because I have the catalog. the most expensive one here, and I'll read the description. It's $13. It's an approved Holy Catholic Bible containing Bible dictionary, history of the Holy Catholic Bible and the Blessed Virgin. I mean, it includes a lot of different things. It includes nearly 300 pages of extra matter and 70 full pages of illustrations. There are different versions of it. But the $13 one is bound in American Morocco, raised panels, full gold sides and edges, emblematic designs, and embossed in gold.
Yeah, I think
$13.
They made the advertising sound really good, because back then that could pay what for almost 2 weeks worth of meals for the Ingalls, 3 weeks worth of meals.
But I'm sorry, it's $13. Wow. It's not $13. It's $13, but it is on sale for $6.50. Still pretty expensive. That's you know what you can get for $6.50 almost. Is a cast iron oven that was $7.87.
Yeah.
That or a Bible. Yeah, you got to ask. You got to cook the food. But, you know, it is a lot of money. Even $3, which is what this is reduced to, is equivalent to $75, which probably is the cost of a good book, right?
That's a high-end Bible.
A good book of the good book. But, you know, yeah, if you were to get a high-end version, I bet you wouldn't have a hard time spending $75 for, like, something really, really out there. But, all right. So the Olsons are going to go for this, and I'm just going to finish out this particular clip.
That's more like
50 cents extra, we can get his name stamped in gold on the front cover.
Which will make the prayers more welcome, I'm sure.
That's not funny, Nils.
Well, can't they for once join in with the other children to buy a present?
Right.
We would, but they're going to pick some silly gift that the Reverend won't like.
Well, how do you know?
I just know. They always do.
Get away from the candy, Willie.
You can have one more piece, Willie. Come along, dear. I'll help you fill out the form.
There's going to be dead people tonight. Dead people in this house. It's just the worst. So they go through the catalog. I'm sorry, Mary and Laura are up in the loft, and they're going through the catalog. This catalog, I mean, I looked through this. This is an exact reprint. This farm equipment and hats and all types of amazing stuff. It's amazing for me to flip through. For them to flip through it, it must be the best thing in the world. So they're just looking and they're dreaming of the kind of gift that they can give Reverend Alden. And I think it's so sweet how they want to do better. They want to give the better gift, but Mary is like, all right, look, we have, I forget how much, like $1.70 or I forget the amount, but like $35 worth of equivalent $35, which is a good amount of money for kids to kind of put together, right?
Yep.
So Laura gets an idea, which I think is so fun, but at the same time, really just nuts. Do you remember this episode from when you were younger?
No, this wasn't one of the standout ones, but yeah, you're right. It's so out of character, I think. Which I think is the general consensus of this episode. When I read online, the general for what the girls do is so out of character for what they do, but it's still at the heart. It reminds us that they're still kids.
Yeah, their heart's in the right place.
They're enamored by the actors that are in the roles, and they're like, you know, especially, you know, Melissa Gilbert, she's like the center of the show pretty much. And it still reminds us, though, even when we were kids, that they're still kids at heart, and they will make decisions that they wouldn't think they would make because we're adults looking at it back at it now.
And the bottom line is they're going to go door to door selling booze. That's really the reality.
Yeah, and literally that lady is like, she looks at us, she squints at her eyes, get real big when she sees 60% alcohol. And you right away, I'm like, oh, she's going to try to get that out of her.
I took a screenshot of that, actually.
And pretty much all that stuff was probably just alcohol that made people feel like numb to the pain or whatever they're having. So that was the remedy.
It was homeopathic. And homeopathic is, I guess you can say, I don't even know how to define homeopathic as much as it's more like herbs and ointments versus medicine, you know, I wanted to say under the counter medicine, but it's not. It's, you know, like pharmacy type medicine. But nonetheless, I'm going to play this where Laura gets the bright idea of how they can make money to get a $3 Bible.
We can do it, Mary. We can more than double our money.
Come to bed.
But we can, Mary. It says right here in the catalog. We can make enough money to get Reverend Alden that good Bible. If you would just look.
Look at what?
It says right here in the catalog exactly how to do it.
Do what?
Make a lot of money. What we do is we order 12 bottles of Dr. Briskin's homeopathic remedies for $1.50.
Laura, that's not our money. It's Sunday school money.
You should read what these medicines cure. Worm fever, face ache, influenza.
Influenza. Now, in the catalog, I had to really dig for this one, but I found something very similar. It's a homeopathic case, and for $1.50, it contains 12 of Dr. Remedies with directions. And you choose 12 from this list of medicines. They just tell you what the medicines are, not what the ailments are. but they're spot on. You get 12 in a box, except this one is called the 12 Chief Remedies, which is kind of interesting. So, and they also spelled the word homeopathic wrong in the catalog, but hey, it's 1897. They probably didn't have too many proofreaders. So I just thought that it was just really kind of interesting. They have this idea of they're going to buy it and they're going to sell to all of the complaining people of Hero Township, right? Kind of funny.
And if you think about it, nowadays, obviously, you don't have it. But back then in the 1800s, you were on the prairie and you had, you know, you obviously had Indians out there, American Indians in different areas. Right. And they had the medicine man
with his medicines. Yeah.
So they could relate, you know, thinking of the contexture, they're thinking, you know, about the Dr. Baker gives us medicines. Well, we can get these remedy medicines. And maybe for all we know, there could be Indians that travel around with their Indian medicines. And that was more prevalent than nowadays, nothing like that at all.
And it was all types of snake oil. Harriet, of course, was a big fan of Dr. Bronner's. I forget what the name was, where it fixes everything. But it was basically booze. It was a lot of booze.
Went into detail with, like I said, the people that came over to the little house were veterans of the industry. So I'm sure they did a lot of research and looked into the catalogs, like your catalog. Maybe they had a copy of the.
I'm 100% sure of it.
Storyline.
I mean, they definitely a series of robot catalog. It's very similar in size and everything to what they're looking at. So I guarantee they did similar research. But, we're kind of questioning it. Mary's like, you know, I don't think it's a great idea. I think we should just buy the Bible. We should do what we're being asked. And Laura's trying to still sell it. So around the breakfast table, I'm going to guess. Pa's talking about watermelon.
Did you say watermelon?
That's right. Edward says he hasn't had a decent watermelon since he's been in Minnesota, so he's going to raise his own.
Well, if he likes them, why not?
He's going to raise 5 acres of them.
5 acres?
That's right. He's going to sell them.
Well, there aren't enough people in all of Hero Township to eat that many watermelons.
Now, if there's not enough people to sell 5 acres of watermelon, why would you open a restaurant here, right? You have to really kind of ask, like, the logic in some of this if it were a real scenario. Yeah, I don't know. 5 acres of watermelon? I bet it would sell pretty well.
Well, that's a lot of 5 acres. I know with 5 acres, I have some decent property here. It's not that, but I'm telling you, 5 acres of watermelon.
Oof.
They would die before you could literally. They would die the watermelon and be gone. The winter would be there before you could get them all, taken out of the ground and taken to sell.
If there's one thing we know, Edwards is not the. The brightest guy in the world where he's thinking like, all right, this is going to be my money crop.
No, we're reminded of that too later in the episode if we get to talking about that and how smart of a man he can be sometimes.
Yes. So basically they're talking about the choice of watermelon.
Well, maybe some of the folks can eat too. I bet I could.
Well, there you go. The man hasn't planted a seed and he's already a success.
Just have to take a chance sometimes, don't you, Pa?
That's part of being alive.
Like we did when we came across the prairie?
Yeah. Sure, a lot of people didn't know what they're going to run into, so they're afraid to take a chance.
But you weren't afraid, and everything worked out all right, didn't it, Pa?
That it did.
We get it, Laura. We get it. Laura's like, didn't it, Pa? I love this kind of Laura, the one where it's like she could sell snowballs to an Eskimo. I don't know if I can say Eskimo anymore. That might not be a PC word. To an Eskimo, too. So we're talking about it, and it seems as though we're pretty convinced. We've convinced Mary for the most part here. So this is them kind of finalizing some of this.
Egg yolk?
I'm sorry. Laura's listing all of the things that the homeopathic medicines cure.
Colic and... guys, pepsia.
Whatever that is.
It's a stomach ache.
Well, Dr. Briskin's homeopathic medicine cures it all. All of them.
I don't care what they cure.
You would if you had it. Imagine the favor we'd be doing to all those people by letting them buy the medicine from us. And not to mention Reverend Alden's Bible.
Laura, it's not our money.
But we'll be doubling it. What's wrong with that?
Laura.
Well, you know what Pa says about taking chances. You just have faith and work hard, and everything will come out all right.
Now I should just go to the very end, right, where they... with the outcome, but I won't. Basically, Mary's like, you know what? Let's do it. You've convinced me. You won't shut up about it. So let's just do it. I am reminded so much of the Brady Bunch by this. I don't know if you were a fan of the Brady Bunch. It's also very Ralph Cramden.
Yeah, I watched Brady Bunch like everybody come home from school and the Brady Bunch. I was more of a Partridge Family person because I play guitar, so I like the music more.
Come on, but
And everybody remembers the volcano episode, of course, of the Brady Bunch and then the Marsha, which has become part of pop culture. I know.
But do you remember when they sold hair? They were selling rabbits, I think it was, and hair tonic, maybe hair tonic.
The hair tonic thing, I think I kind of remember something about hair tonic.
I think it might have been, and I might get fact-checked on this, but I think that might have been the very last filmed episode. And it's where they find that the hair tonic is turning hair green, and Greg's hair turns green, and either prom or school photos, something, but his hair is green. And they're also selling rabbits. This is one of the Jinx episodes. And it's around Easter time, so they decide to dye the rabbits green and sell them for Easter. I need to go back and watch that episode. That makes no sense. But I don't know if I'm being accurate in that description. But this reminds me of something where you buy it and you resell it. And this was kind of an ongoing scam in the 70s and 80s, right?
Yeah, I think I put down in my notes... For us that grew up in the 70s and read comic books, you always had a comic book. And then always in the back, you always had the little ads or throughout it where you could buy the Army Men for like $3 for like 100 yeah. Army Men. Or the Sea Monkeys or the bodybuilder thing. You know, buy this and you become a bodybuilder. They don't have that, I don't think, in modern comics. But as kids, I remember looking through that and saying, oh, wow, Sea Monkeys. Wow, come on, can I buy the Sea Monkeys and order this? You know, out of the back of the comics.
Yeah, they're shrimp. I think they ended up being shrimp. Yeah. But you know what's interesting? Do you remember there was another scam that was kind of like that in the same era where you would probably pay money for the kit and you would get greeting cards that you would sell?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Do you remember this at all?
Yeah, I do remember that. And I remember you could buy remember Encyclopedia Britannica in the 80s? God. Where you could buy that and go door to door, try to sell those too?
Yeah, that was... I never really tried any of that stuff. We had one of those kind of things, one of those... encyclopedias. I'm like, what do I need the internet for? I got these 600 books.
Yep.
I can look up anything I want. So the bottom line is, it just really reminds me of something that was kind of going on in the 70s, kids being kids, kids making poor choices, I think is what this is all about. They open the package. This is their response. They mail away. We get a cool shot of, the train. I don't know why they wouldn't order through the mercantile. That never made too much sense to me. But nonetheless, they didn't. I guess if they ordered through the mercantile, they wouldn't be able to order what they wanted. So here we go. We're opening up this lovely box.
Jiminy! They sure are pretty.
Sure are a lot of them.
Was Jiminy a thing? Like, was that a saying? I always thought of Jiminy Crickets.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, but I'm just wondering if the Jiminy Cricket, did that come from the Disney movie? Because obviously they wouldn't have had the Disney movie. This is pre that, obviously, in terms of history.
Yeah.
Does Jiminy then Crickets? Because I think, I don't know what the word, I didn't get a chance to look it up. I wanted to see what that word Jiminy meant, because I looked up homeopathic, and, you know, that basically says here, a substance that causes symptoms of a disease in healthy people can cure similar symptoms in sick people. This is a doctrine. This doctrine is called simula similibus centaur, or like cures like, basically.
Huh.
That's all. Well, yes, you're right. The Jiminy Crickets. I don't know where that came from. I was waiting for it to say it completely like that, too.
I looked up Jiminy. Jiminy Christmas is something that people say. It's used as a mild oath, often in phrases such as Jiminy, Jiminy Crickets, and Jiminy Christmas. I don't know what that means exactly. I love it when the definition makes me more confused.
Yeah.
I think it was a saying. I have a feeling it was a saying, and Jiminy Cricket comes from that original saying. But they go on, and they're talking about it. It's a lovely box, and the jars and everything. It looks awesome, actually.
Because there are a lot of sicknesses. Just means we'll be meeting a lot of different kinds of customers.
I hope we find them before Pa finds out what we're doing.
Tomorrow's Saturday. We can get them all sold before anybody knows it.
Yeah. You're going to be millionaires at this point, or dozenaires. They decide to divide and conquer. They're going to go, and they're going to sell without any problem whatsoever. I mean, this is... I think everybody who... Every kid has been in this point where you're like, in your head, it is 100% going to work, right? And you have those 5 minutes of delusions of grandeur. And then it just kind of falls apart. But this is the music that usually exists when you're pretty happy. Or not, maybe not happy.
Oh, Mary, I didn't see you standing there. Pardon me.
Oh, that's all right, Mrs. Foster. You didn't get me.
Thank goodness. What can I do for you, Mary?
As a matter of fact, I came by to tell you that my sister and I are selling Dr. Briskin's homeopathic remedies now, so people won't have to order them anymore.
That's nice, Mary. Thank you for telling me.
You can get them right now. You don't have to wait anymore.
Yes, I understand.
Why are you yelling, Mary? It's always funny when Mary is talking to adults like this. She's always yelling. Hey, is that your cat? Yeah. What is your cat's name again? I forget.
My new cat, Daisy.
Daisy.
Yeah, you're right, though, about Mary. I think it's just part of her. The character is more nervous, where Laura's more calm about things.
What do you mean?
In general, I think Mary's more uptight as a character.
You think? Definitely.
This one's for earache, and this one's for toothache. We have medicine for practically everything. Just 25 cents.
Well, I don't have a toothache, and I don't have an earache. But if anything comes up, I'll remember.
I have a little bit of an earache after listening to you, though. you might need it.
Have a nice day, Mary.
Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Briskin's homeopathic remedies are known all over the world. It says right here on the label.
Well, then how come I never heard of them, young lady?
I'm telling you now. My sister and I are telling everybody around Walnut Grove about them so they can buy the remedies from us.
Dyspepsia and ague. Don't reckon I need any medicine for that.
Well, how about this one? You better pick one fast now, because there's a lot of people that'll be wanting these, and we only have 12 bottles.
So this kid picks up one of the bottles that have some pills in it, and he starts feeding them to their hogs. And the woman's basically mad that, of course, it could poison them, I guess. You know, it's probably not going to. But Laura's basically saying, hey, look, you just use them. You know, you owe me 25 cents. So she said, maybe you can get the hogs to pay for them. So things are falling apart pretty quickly here. It's just not working out as well as that they had hoped. They return back to the barn where they're hiding the medicine from Pa. This is where, you know, things are pretty bad. When you're a kid and you're hiding things physically, you know that you're going down a path of lies.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
I say, yeah, it can only get worse. And when I was watching this from a production point of view, I can't remember any other episodes. I noticed the inside of the barn was black paint. I don't know if that was this pine tar that they put on the wood to keep it from rotting back in the day, and that was historically correct, or if they wanted the mood to be somber, and so they made it darker, you know, to make the lighting less.
It seems real dark in there, definitely.
Yeah, because the wood is the darker wood, I noticed, and that's why I said, I don't know if they pine tarred it, just to be accurate historically, to protect the barn and the inside from the weather, because obviously weather would get in, or if they just wanted the scene to be darker So they painted it with a black paint so emotionally you could feel what they were doing was wrong and was going to end up bad, probably.
That's a good point. That's interesting. But they come back and they kind of, they're going to count all their money and see how well they did.
You're going to be awful mad, Mary. I didn't sell one bottle.
Me neither.
I got rid of one. Bertie Hopps and fed it to his pa's pigs.
Didn't they pay you for it?
Sure hope those pigs don't get sick. Mrs. Hobson was awful mad.
Oh, Laura.
Well, it wasn't my fault.
It was your fault we bought this medicine instead of the Bible.
Well, you ordered them.
But you talked me into it.
Well, you didn't have to listen to me. You're older than I am.
So, you're going to hell, both of you. You know, you guys have done the worst possible thing ever. They're unraveling pretty quickly. We meet a traveling... I don't even know. How would you describe this guy? The traveling guy. The scammer.
Yeah, traveling scammer.
Yeah.
And what was going on just previously with the two sisters. That was something as a kid, if you had a brother or sister, you always went back and forth. And you always came to, well, you're the oldest. You should know better. Which is usually what the parents would say, too, when you were in trouble with two kids.
Yeah.
Well, you should know better. You're the oldest. So we'd always do that, our brothers or sisters. I was the oldest, so that always fell on me all the time.
You're the one in trouble, always. So we have a traveling scammer. He kind of comes and he gives this whole sad story about how he's trying to sell these, what is it that he's selling? Indian necklaces? I forget what it is.
Something like that. I thought they were little beets. They look like little vegetables or small little things on a...
They look like chestnuts.
Chain.
They don't look very attractive. But he's trying to sell them for a quarter, and instead he trades for a meal. So in one of the more curious moments, Pa pulls up and sees a man leaving his house. And Pa comes in and he's like, who, what's going on? I know that guy.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Pa.
Hey, wasn't it Mr. Farvis I saw leaving just now?
Well, yes, you know that poor man.
You didn't buy anything from him?
No, as a matter of fact, he bought something from me.
Oh, yeah? What'd he buy?
Supper. He paid Ma 25 cents for some stew, cornbread, and coffee.
You mean he gave you 25 cents in cash?
Well, not exactly.
Let me tell you, he traded you. A string with some buckeyes on it.
A necklace, yes.
Don't feel bad. Edwards gave him his shoes today.
Well, Charles, I don't think it's funny when a poor man like that...
Carolyn, he's not a poor man. He doesn't have a family. He just tells that story to get people to buy things from him or trade with him.
Well, I never...
I told you not to be upset. You ran into the world's best salesman. I'm itch the tea.
Oh, Charles. Charles is rubbing it in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm surprised she fell for it, his wife. I'm surprised Carolyn actually fell for that. She seemed like a smarter woman than to fall for that. But, you know, it's just part of the narrative of the character and just for convenience of story to move the episode along. They didn't get too detailed. They didn't have him show up in the middle of it, Pa show up in the middle of him doing it and start yelling and say, get off my property and whatever.
Yeah.
They kind of convenience of writing then keep the story moving because the focus really wasn't. This episode was about Mary and Laura.
Yeah.
Then more about the rest of the cast, where a lot of episodes are focused on more, on Pa and Ma, a little more involved. This is a story centric on them and at the core, the gift and kid and being a child and learning a lesson.
But Laura, Laura's thinking, all right, the scam worked for this guy. I'm going to try it. So she goes and tries to scam this woman. I don't think we've ever seen this woman before. I'm not 100% sure, but she's carrying water and she's complaining that she has aches and pains. And Laura's like, hey, we have something for you. We have something we could sell you. But it's 25 cents and she's very poor and it's just not going to happen. Right. So in a way, Laura gets scammed again. Well, not really again, but for the first time. The other one was just kind of not keeping an eye on your product. But this woman basically needs the medicine, and Laura's like, you know what? I'm just going to give it to you, which is nice, I guess, but now you're 50 cents down, which is, it's kind of funny. But we have Mary starting to get really mad. Mary is actually the most mad that I've seen her up to date. I don't know if she's been this mad on the show, so So here's a little bit of that.
What do you mean you gave it to her?
Well, she was so pitiful. If you'd have seen her, you would have done...
All I can see is you're getting us deeper and deeper into trouble.
Mary!
Mary's going to be like an insurance, like, adjuster. You know, it's like, look, it's just, it's the price. I don't...
Well, see what I wonder. I wonder if that lady really needed the medication, was really a sore stomach looker, or if she just liked the alcohol. Because literally, she picked the thing up, smiled, and you could tell... She beat Laura at her own game and almost and said, you know what? She got the alcohol and she was happy, lifted it easily and walked in like there was no pain at all.
Yeah. And it's 60% alcohol. So, I mean, we're talking, you know, a pretty strong, a pretty nice liqueur or whatever it might be.
Yep.
Some type of tincture. So it's just really funny. She takes a couple belts of it and goes in. Even, you know, Mary is even hitting up Miss Beadle, which is just... Kind of.
No, that's the lowest.
Yeah, like things are pretty bad at this point. So here, this is the desperation in her voice.
Miss Beadle.
Yes, Mary?
Have you been feeling well lately?
Why, yes, very well, thank you.
Miss Beadle.
Yes?
You haven't felt weak, or maybe you tire easily, or lost your appetite? Or maybe you don't sleep very good.
No, Mary, really, I'm fine.
Miss Beadle.
Yes, Mary.
Is your stomach weak? Are you getting thin? How's your circulation?
Mary, I assure you, I feel wonderful. And I'm enjoying the best of health.
And we actually, we get one last, you know, like, hey, if you're sick, you know, hit me up.
Miss Beadle.
Yes, Mary.
If you do get to feeling poorly, will you tell me, please?
Miss Beadle's like, get away from me.
Yeah, she's got to look like, doesn't know what to make of what Mary's, you know, is Mary concerned to her or something wrong with Mary or
right.
What's going on here? Yeah, she's got to look like, she's like shaking her head and literally when she walks away, you can see her head's like nodding a little bit like, I can't believe this kid. I don't know what's wrong with this girl.
Laura then puts on... like a potato sack, something that I think they were trying to sell the Ingalls on episode one to make dresses for the girls, for Country Girls. Actually, no, Country Girls was not episode one. I forget what episode it was. But in Country Girls, they want them to buy the cheapest of materials. This is basically that. It's like the stuff they're throwing out. It also doesn't work because the neighbor recognizes her and says, aren't you the Ingalls girl? And it's like, yes, ma'am. But she's like, she's really filthy and poor. It's just really getting really desperate and kind of funny at this point. But it's unraveling to the point where they know what's coming. And even Mary is sitting by the creek and doing some fishing. So.
And now you spoiled everything.
Oops,
we've got to tell.
But we can't.
We have to, Laura.
But I thought you said we were going to get sick.
What good would it do? They'll know tomorrow anyway.
Who are you going to tell?
Pa.
You. Not me, because you're the oldest.
Why do you always bring that up? It was your idea.
Why do you always bring that up?
And it sounds like you've had this conversation with your siblings a number of times.
Yep. Yes, we all have grown up in the 70s when we were kids, still allowed to be kids still and make mistakes and use rationalization that was basically from a child's point of view. And, you know, and there was the adults and their decisions, which we lived by pretty much. And then there was the ones we made that were usually wrong compared to what the adults would say. Well, the adults were right and kids, we were wrong. Especially if we got caught. If we didn't get caught, then we were right, usually.
Now, you were talking about a situation where you kind of got caught, and you were told. I didn't know if you wanted to share that.
Yeah, I'll wait till we get into, I think, when we get to what the Pa, how Pa handles it.
As it's even unraveling more.
For our childhoods, growing up in the 70s, I think it was a common way, I think, when mistakes were made, or discipline, in terms of discipline and how to learn from something, we were allowed to fail, I think. Well, when we get to that, I'll get into that.
Okay, cool. Now, this is a little bit of a this is a tiny little scene that most people probably don't even notice, but there's a lot of rapport here between Ma and Pa in this one little scene, and there's something about this scene I think it's so sweet and nice, and it just shows the kind of relationship these two have, and it's really not much of a scene, but I'm going to play it. I watched it three times. I'm like, this is my favorite little scene from this episode. It really has not too much to do with the episode at all, but it has to do with the banter between Michael Landon and Karen Grosley that I just think is really magical on screen, and this is one of those examples. Here we go.
Mary, Laura.
Oh, they're not here.
Well, where'd they go?
They went fishing.
Fishing, Mary?
That surprised me, too.
Well, I wanted them to pick some berries for me. I wanted to make a pie for the Reverend's birthday tomorrow.
Wait a minute now. I'm going to make you a little deal. Make two pies, and I'll pick the berries for you.
Oh, I think I can manage two pies quite nicely.
Well, in that case, I'm on my way.
You going to pick them with your fishing pole?
The best berries are always down by the river. See you soon.
I don't know. There's something like really sweet about it. It's very, it shows his childlikeness and it shows how playful they are. And I just thought it was good. I love their chemistry on screen.
Yeah. I wonder if he also wanted to go check on the kids. Cause he said, if Mary went, they got to be something going on with these kids here. He knows what Laura's like, and you know, Mary and Laura are kind of opposites in personality, where Laura's the adventurous outgoing, you know, playing in the mud girl, tomboy girl. Mary's more the proper, you know, reading kind of girl, and he probably was saying, there's probably something up. I'll just check, even though I'm not going to say my concern to Carolyn. Yeah. You know, it was unspokenly, I think it was unspoken, him letting him her know, going fishing. Also, he's going to check up on the girls.
There's another thing I wanted to point out. I kind of jumped over it, but I'm going to just go back for a moment, is when Laura wears the potato sack and goes and tries to sell her filth to one of the neighbors, there's this really interesting synthy 70s thing going on that David Rose put together. I just wanted to play that for a few seconds. You know, they were like, all right, we need a synthesizer. All right, when are we going to use the synthesizer on Little House? I'll find a place.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, when I caught that, it adds to the, because if you listen to this, when we talked at the end about the episode from the production values and how I think it's very high in this, the music is used a lot in the story to drive the emotions. But I think this was used purposely because it's so awkward sounding for Little House that you kind of cringe, because I'm cringing watching her walk up that sack that she found under the ground, you know, outside the school, laying in the grass and whatever, the hay below a tree. And then she's wearing this thing and you're like, no, she didn't do that, did she? No, Laura would know better to do that. And you're like cringing, like, oh, she's walking up and trying to sell the poor girl. Oh, she looks like a cave girl. And it's a cringe. I think it added to the cringe in a moment.
But if you wanted to sound like that without a synthesizer, you use what's called a Jew harp or a mouth harp. And you ever see those things? You bite down on it. And, you know, it's sometimes called a glass harp too. But Jew harp is, that's... just seems
that
insulting.
Would fit
I don't
too
know
much,
why.
I think, musically in the time period, that kind of harp or the awkwardness of the synthesizer. I mean, those are even awkward notes as a musician, I think. Those are some odd note choices.
Right, it's all dissonant and it's all like...
dissonant going. There's no resolution of it either. No resolution of the opening notes. So it's awkward coming into the scene.
Like, I have a Mini Moog, which I was lucky enough to kind of pick up when people were not buying them up like crazy. And that has three... You have to do tuning to that. So if you put it a little bit out of tuning, you kind of get that whole like uneasiness in it, like a dissonant type of sound. But it was interesting to hear a synthesizer in the middle of Little House. It's always fun. But it's also extremely perfect for 1975 going into 76. It's time to come clean. Pa joins them for fishing. They chicken out. They're hoping for a miracle. Now we're starting to get a little bit more holy. We're mentioning miracles and
yeah.
maybe maybe if you just didn't make this mistake, but they were going to tell Pa, and Pa just, I don't know, they can't go through. It's a complete fail. This is Saturday. By the way, this is all taking place over a 5-week period, which is interesting. You know, they had enough time. 5 weeks, I guess, was enough time to not only order the medicine, but to also get the Bible here. So, I mean, they're really maybe calling it really close. Maybe it would take 2 weeks normally. Doesn't seem so bad, really.
Yeah, you had a Pony Express, you had the railway, the trains that would, you know, bring like the packages in. So there was no priority mail or express, overnight express like there is nowadays, you know.
Well, even when we were kids, it was like 3 to 6 weeks or 6 to 8 weeks, yeah. You know, delivery. They're getting it 2 weeks. It's like they have Amazon Prime or something for the time.
Yeah.
So they wake up and, you know, I'm sorry to say it, but they don't feel well. They're sick. So, Dr. Ingalls is checking in on them.
They look all right to me.
I'm awful sick, Pa. Me too. We just can't go to church, Pa. We have laryngitis.
You have what?
Laryngitis.
Laryngitis.
How long do you think this laryngitis is going to last?
We need a few more hours to get over it, Pa.
Well, maybe by the time Ma and Carrie and I get back from church, you'll be feeling better then?
Sure we will, Pa. We just have to get our strength back.
Yeah. First of all, it's pronounced laryngitis, and it means you can't talk. Now, what's this all about? Why don't you want to go to church? Come on, you certainly can't talk, so tell me.
We know why. We'll cut to the chase. And this is really interesting because some parents would go, look, I'll take care of it. Everything will be fine. And he really makes them confront the Reverend and do the right thing. I think it's the right thing. Maybe some people might question whether it's the right thing to make them do that. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I think he's making them do the right thing. And initially you thought, well, Pa's just going to say, okay, you can stay home from church today. Because everybody tried that when they were kids. You didn't want to go to church. I'm not feeling good this morning, yeah. Mom. You know, I'm not feeling better. Well, you don't be doing all me come home to church and find you doing this or doing
watching
that.
Watching Kung Fu.
Yeah, watching Kung Fu or whatever, Buck Rogers or something like that, you know. But as we get into it, you'll see he handles it the right way. You're showing the kids... You're letting kids fail in owning up. He says, you know, in basic language, you're going to own up to your mistake, which I think is nowadays is not done as much.
Now, because, I do think that he took it really lightly, though, because what they did is, in my opinion, probably your opinion as well, taking money that is collected by a group of people and doing what you want with it is not the right thing to do.
No, I was surprised he wasn't more angry at that, but... I think he knew they were going to go, they'd make him talk to the Reverend, mm-hmm. you know, and come clean with what they had done. Because he knew at the core why they did it. Because you could see literally Laura's like, don't be mad at Mary. It was my fault. She's like, well, I'm the adult. So you could see the kids were literally, they knew what they did were wrong and they were struggling. And for all we know, he could have knew there was something going on over the last 5 weeks with the kids. He could have maybe seen the kids going into their barn or they were a little off in the way they're acting, and he knew there was something going on. Because he wasn't mad. He was making them say to him, okay, so where did you get the money from? And he didn't yell. He just said, where'd you get the money from? Looking back and forth at him. Because he knew they both were involved.
Yeah, I mean, struggling with it. Their hearts were in the right place. What they were trying to do is a really nice thing. Putting more effort in than what was needed. They could have just... done maybe what people would consider to be the easy way out is to just order the Bible and that's it. You're done. But they were actually putting more effort in. And I think that in a few minutes when we play the Reverend Alden scene, I think it's really sweet what they say about it. But this is Charles coming out. He brings the girls into church 30 minutes early to speak to Reverend Alden. And they're in their Sunday best and Carrie's outside, of course. Carrie doesn't have one line in this. I don't even think she gets a close-up in this episode. That might not even be Carrie. But here we go. This is Charles coming out, and this is what I mean by him kind of taking it light.
kind of sorry for them. They really look scared.
This is what you bought with the Sunday school treasury money?
Yes, sir.
The money was in your care. You were instructed to buy a Bible.
I talked her into trying to get a better one. That's why.
It was my fault.
It was not, Mary. It was my fault.
I suspect you both had a part in it. The question is, have you learned anything from this mistake?
Yes, sir.
You're sure?
We won't do it again, Reverend. Never.
That's the truth. Not ever.
I'd like you to leave this with me. Would you like to join your parents now?
So they go back out. I mean, they definitely learned a lesson here. All right. We're in the mercantile. Sorry, I missed my spot right there for a sec. But we're in the mercantile, and the Olsons are putting together their gift. They want to show Nels the Bible. It's this big old Bible, and it's super nice looking, and it hasn't even been wrapped yet.
For heaven's sakes, will you stop bellowing? I'm coming! Children!
Come on, hurry up now. Let's go.
Good idea. We haven't wrapped Reverend Olson's Bible.
Why not?
We wanted to show it to you.
Yes, see? His name in gold?
I know it'll be his best present, because it's the most expensive.
Yes, well, I'm sure the Lord will take that into consideration when he listens to prayers.
Oh, Nels.
Nels just gives her the look of like, oh my God, my life. And he has to wrap it. Oh, poor Nels. He's always dressed really well, though. He is ready for church. He needs some God in his life to get him through the next week.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear, like you can tell, where he sits in the household, wise is in power, and, you know, he doesn't really push back too much, even though he disagrees in the comment he makes about, you know, about that'll make your prayers be heard better, which is, you know, it's an underlying meaning that a lot of people outside the church and even people inside church will say, well, if I give more money, my prayers are going to be answered. I'm going to look like a better Christian if I dress nice when I go to church.
Hmm.
Or, excuse me, sorry, that's my phone.
That's fine.
Can't get through off.
It's your cat. Like,
that's my phone started. Sorry, I thought I had the volume up. But yes, sometimes you'll think the general, especially as you're a newer Christian, you'll think if I dress nicer, it makes me a better Christian, go to church. Or from there earlier, if I give more money, or if I say fancy Christian words, I'm more, you know, God will favor me more, which is not, there's no truth to that at all. But what he says, it was almost like a narrative they put in the script of what even, you know, as a Christian or a church-going person, what sometimes they could think of themselves or the outside world could think of people who go to church. It was just something, the underlying tone, but also reminds us of his character on how he saw it, but he also can be firm and fight back to, you know, to his wife on with certain things that he thinks are wrong.
No, we missed,
bring that up.
I feel as though we missed an opportunity here in this episode because we didn't get to see a Sunday school scene where they were like, you have the gift, right? You have it, right? And to just see them kind of totally uncomfortable, unless Sunday school happens after the sermon. I don't know. That could be the reality of the situation. Not sure.
Yeah.
But here we go. This is Reverend Alden gets everybody to sit down, and he's going to deliver his sermon for the week.
Welcome. Good morning. The sermon for today is on the gift of love. Now, there once was a man that wanted to show his love for a friend by giving him a gift. And this man was rich in love, but he was poor in worldly goods. And when he went home and counted his money, he found that he couldn't purchase the gift that he thought to give his friend, and he was sad. And his sadness was felt by all who knew him. But then he decided he'd plant a crop for his friend. But that too failed. The man was heartbroken. But when the friend heard of what he had endured for him, he was overcome. He embraced the man, and he wept. For it was not the gift that counted. It was the love that was in the man's heart.
So I think that's a really sweet, and I mean, Reverend Alden really just brings to the table, I mean, he had, let's say, 20 minutes to put together this sermon, right? He didn't know that he was going to, you know, not get, no, he didn't know that this was going to be presented to him. So this is one of the things I always admired about the character, is somebody who can really think on his feet. He always has a story. And I think that this goes for a lot of people who are ministers or reverends. They always kind of have the right thing to say right up their sleeve. And I think this is one of those situations. We get a lot of like great shots in this particular scene with like the guilt of Mary and the guilt of Laura, when Harriet is handing the Bible to Nellie and Nels looks at it and rolls his eyes. There's a lot of really amazing visuals that are going on here, but there's so much to this.
You see Doc Baker looking at him, like looking, leaning like forward a little bit to see he could tell what's going on as they were past it.
See, I didn't watch that.
To the mother, to the brother, over to Willie, to the father.
I didn't see that. So if you were to watch the scene over again and watch different people, you'd probably get all these different layers of personality, you know?
Oh, yeah. You see Laura and both Mary slowly creeping down and they're like going lower in the pew down and the parents are looking at him. And you can see Pa's like got a smile. He's trying not to crack up a smile. And the mother can see it too. You know, Carolyn can see it too. And I just thought this was handled so well. I think the fact that they had Dabbs Greer is perfect.
I love him.
He's got the gravitas and a look. And like you said, a pastor still at the core. A pastor is almost like a counselor or a self-help at the core, but they use the Bible to apply and they use their experience, life experience with that. It depends what denomination you are, that if you're more of a Catholic, that's a little bit less of that, more if you're more of a Baptist, you know, it happens. And at the core, a pastor is almost a help person, almost like a doctor, a spiritual or emotional, psychological doctor to people. They're shepherding their people is what it's called, a shepherd of people in the old days. You know, and you were responsible as a pastor to answer someday that they would say to God, you have answered to God, the people you shepherd and how you took the responsibility of shepherding people or, you know, of teaching people and guiding them.
I think it's really, I love Dabbs Greer so much. I think his name is also kind of interesting. I always think of him as a rapper. It just sounds like it would be MC Dabbs Greer or something. But I just love his character. I love the actor. And he's had a pretty long career. But he goes on to continue with this sermon because, like most scenes that I love with him, he is somewhere to go. He has this whole, in 20 minutes, he put together this entire thing. And everybody has to get ready to start crying.
This old Bible was used by my father. He gave it to me when I was a boy. Over the years, I've acquired many Bibles.
Now, Laura and Mary, like you said, they're creeping down more and more and more. And it's almost like when you're on a roller coaster and you get into the top and you're like, oh it's coming. This is the thing we've waited for. And it's just hilarious.
Newer Bibles, fancier Bibles. When you're a minister, everyone gives you a Bible. But this particular Bible is very precious to me. The cover's worn.
Do you want to explain what the Olsons are doing at this point as he's like saying how much he cherishes this this family Bible?
Yeah, you can tell. Nellie knows. She's the way she acts as a person is wrong, but because of her privilege, she thinks she can act like that the way she is with the kids throughout the narrative of, you know, up till she gets older storyline. She pretty much just hands it to her mom and out and asks, like, here, you take it. And the mother's like, okay, here, Will, you take it. I'm telling you to take it because she's the next. He'll listen to her and he hands it to her to him, excuse me, then Willie's like, he don't care about his dad or whatever. He's like, I don't want him to do, no way. Here, you take it, Dad. I'm not, he wouldn't even, I would never think of doing that to my parents back then because I would have, you know, we know what would have happened afterward, the discipline. I would never have thought to do anything like that to my parents. But that tells you how the dynamic of the kids are and how much they really think of their parents other than they give them stuff and money and prestige because of their family.
Yeah.
But they just hand it off like, here, you take it. No, you take it. I don't
and
want
it ends
to take
up
it.
With Nels. And it's just weird. They went from having so much pride in this gift to now being ashamed of it. And, you know, I thought that was a little bit weird. I mean, what are they going to do with this Bible? I mean, it has his name. It's not like you can go return it.
Yeah, and you can tell Nels is like, Nels isn't embarrassed. And Nels is embarrassed for his family because he's supposed to be the head of the family, even though, you know, the mother is. But he's like, oh, I'm going to have to hide and take care of this. So he's responding. In the end, he's taking the burden of it, and he's putting it inside. You can see that's when Doc Baker was watching him as he gives it to Willie. And Doc Baker doesn't make a face. He just leans forward like, okay, well, I guess Nels is going to answer for this, huh, for so what they did.
Here's the rest of that scene.
Pages are yellowed. But that doesn't subtract from the inspiration that's within it. This old Bible's like love. The older it gets, the better it becomes, because it's so precious to me. Today is my birthday, and I have received a very special gift from our Sunday school children. This case. Now, how did they know that I had always wanted a case to carry my favorite Bible and keep it safe? This one's exactly right. I'll always cherish it because it comes from children I cherish and will now contain a gift from my father and to all of you. Love each other. Care about each other. Forgive each other's mistakes and we'll all be bound closer together. Like this case in this old Bible, it's the gift of love that's the greatest gift of all. Now, would you all join me by turning to page 196? And
sure would, but really, really sweet ending. I thought that it was really great, and this is how it ends, which is very surprising to me. Now, Laura and Mary personally learned a lesson here. They learn to not, I guess, get scammed into, you know, trying to do these, like, type of get-rich-quick schemes. But I just want to know, how did the other kids feel about this? I mean, they voted. You know, they all came together, and it was a democracy, and everybody had a vote, and they basically made the decision for everyone. I feel as though that's a lesson that they should have learned. I just feel like no lesson was learned, really, except their own personal not falling for these type of things. And I want to know if they had to pay back the money.
Oh, what I think a lot of it was what was unsaid and wasn't in the script. It's for us to take as viewers, to take after this great speech at the end, the great sermon for us as viewers after the episode's over to think about. And if you think about it, I'm sure you're like, you know that the parents that, you know, the other townspeople that they tried to sell the medicine to were thinking, like, you know, the one lady says, what kind of mother? I thought she was a good parent.
Yeah.
And you're thinking about what's going to happen with that. I think a lot of it is basically what we think about afterwards. And that stuff, we don't actually see it, but those things kind of happen. Because I'm sure the father and the mother had a discussion with them afterwards about everything, you know, about that. And
yeah, I would have loved to see them kind of run into the woman outside of the church or something and say, oh, you look nice today.
Well, I think part of that was part of his message when he says that we got everybody, regardless of the mistakes we make or the wrong choices we make, we have to love each other. It could have been indirectly the pastor's way of, for all we know, that we didn't see him directly if any of those actors or people were at the church. But that his message, which if there was anybody that they tried to sell the medicine to, which they didn't show, but it could have been hinted at, is telling these people, you know, these kids made the decisions. We don't agree with them, but they made it out of love. And the parents of the people they tried to put this out of medicine to could have just said, well, Pastor, he's right. The kids did it because of this. We're just going to let this go, you know, and not talk to Carolyn or Charles.
Well, I think it was really sweet. I have a lot of good memories about this episode. I remember it as being one of the easier to watch. I mean, there's really not too much going on here. It's fun. You get Laura dressed up in the sack. I think that's a lot of fun. But Gerald, I want to thank you so much for getting together to do this podcast. I want to mention the OSI Files podcast is available in a number of different places. Where do you recommend people go to first?
We do it on Sundays. We're off. I think we're off.
You do live shows, which is interesting.
Yeah, we do live shows. That's why I'm used to having the video thing.
Yeah.
We're just doing the vocal thing here with the camera and stuff. But we do it through Facebook Live on Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which we have an episode this upcoming Sunday. And we're basically back on track. We actually took a week off. And then on Wednesdays, we have the OSI Files, where it's an episode of The Bionic Woman, and it's John, who's the main host, John S. Drew. Mm-hmm. And then he'll have Elizabeth Goddard, who does The Bionic Woman, with him on Wednesdays, same time, 8 o'clock, like just like The Bionic Woman was, 8 o'clock on Wednesdays, and 6 Mil was Sundays at 8. It's a live show. People can tune in the comments and make comments, and we bring up the comments and stuff like that as we're talking. And we do similar to this. We do a little more discussion, a little less, less. We show some clips, videos. And we always do a historical thing at the beginning with a TV guide, and then a historical what was going on in the nation at the time, whether it was in music or movies, and just kind of that, which a lot of the retro shows are starting to do, tie in what was going on in the world at the time.
Well, definitely, I think the people who listen to this show would definitely find it really interesting. But again, it's the OSI Files podcast. I'll put a link to it, of course, in the show notes. Yep. And
we're on iTunes and everything. Yeah, you can find it. And yeah, with this episode, where I really thought before we end, the production values were really well done. It had a very 50s Universal Western movie feel to it. You had the director was William Claxton, who actually was an actor and then worked his way up into production, which a lot of actors did back then, to where he was a director of this episode. He was one of Michael Landon's favorite actors, and he worked on him with Bonanza. Then he worked on him with this. Then he went on the Highway to Heaven with him. Same thing with the writer. She worked on Days of Our Lives. She worked on My Three Sons, which was the 60s. And like you said, Michael Landon brought a lot of people.
Yeah, he definitely kept his own clique of people. It's like once you were in with him, it was like you were basically set, it seemed.
Yeah, and a lot of them were veterans. Like I looked up the director. He was born in like the teens. The writer was born in the 20s. So these people had a lot of experience, which I think helped, as you've talked about in previous episodes, other people had on. This show, everything flowed really nicely. It had a look to it.
Yeah, I love the way it looked. This particular episode in particular, it was there was something about the overall look, and some of the scenes are kind of dark. So I have to go back and look at this because I wonder if they were trying to kind of keep a high contrast, darker tone to this entire episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Walnut Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast.